Attend Hut, Luke DJ Legion, welcome to Breeze Shooting by Luke DJ, where the breeze shall be shot, boom boom, with both barrels. This episode of the podcast picks up after the previous episode. It deals with my second part of my trip to the Alps. Alps 2019, trying to win the lottery. Before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves. Confucius. He kind of said it and he didn't. After the Etapsator, the remaining 22 Orwellians depart Moutier for Briançon, and they try to get on TV when they're watching the tour on the Galibier. After not completing the Etap, I detail my redemption arc as I seek the title of Tropical Weather Ginger. Chapter 1, Barry Postelberger. Three people who were on the 3-day trip left our group. We said au revoir to Anne Horn, Anne-Marie Lockeray, and Donald Duffy. A casual breakfast and a totally cash croissant preceded the rest day ride. Some little piggy stayed at home, but this little piggy avoided roast beef, but went to market. I brought my second wax chain to the lockup to replace it after today's ride. A wax chain will usually last 400 kilometers before it starts making noise. My front mech was making a horrendous rubbing noise since I replaced my chain ring. John from Sportif Brakes, he put my bike on a stand. He did some black magic, which is like all you can really do on the front derailleur. It stopped making noise. I had the rest day spin route on my Garmin Edge A30. The Climb Pro feature showed the only climb on today's route, 8.2 kilometers at 7%. It was already roasting hot at 11 a.m. when we left. Barry Green suggested that we give me a lead out on the climb. It was kind, after me not completing the Etap the previous day. I hoped that this would kickstart my redemption arc. I felt very uncomfortable sitting on Barry, Taylor and Peter's wheels. It was 37 degrees and we were riding at my threshold power. Near the top, Peter attacked. It took a 560 watt effort to keep with him. Then Taylor took it up. He was only pedaling with one leg. I was doing 460 watts to stay there. Barry was a final lead out. He was riding in a much more reasonable 415 watts. I was supposed to tell him when to pull over, but the Climb Pro feature on the Garmin was saying that the climb was longer. We hit the top with Barry first over the line. He had Lucas Postelsberger'd me. This wasn't the most grievous thing that happened that day. It turned out that the fake Sean Kelly had Strava sniped all of us. He started the climb off the back of the group and finished just behind me. He was the second fastest Orwell time on Strava. Alan Hickey has the fastest time. He said that on a hard stage of the Haute Route Alps in a few months later in August 2019. He had much more pleasant temperatures though, average of 11 degrees Celsius. So, essentially cheating with that Michele Ferrari Mercury. At the top, someone mentioned that there was lots of crickets chirping. I said, "Don't mention the cricket around Taylor." New Zealand had recently lost the World Cup of cricket to England. The Indian lads in my office, they said the match was a total fix. On the descent, we found a well with ice cold water. I dumped out my soupy fluid and sang "For the First Time in Forever" from Frozen as I sipped down the cold water. Shane Phelan got two punctures on the descent. I mean, that's like classic Shane. It was super dangerous for him, though, as we were going downhill. Ian Devlin, Brian Colfer, and I waited for him on the second puncture. Phil went in the van to pick Shane up. We rolled down the rest of the ascent, and we descended all the way into Bride-les-Bains for lunch. Some of the gossip at lunch surrounding the numbers of finishing the some of the gossip at lunch surrounded the finishing numbers for the etape. A touchy subject for me. Only 10,000 of 15,000 sign-ups finished. Out of Sportif Break's 260 attendees, 60 didn't finish. Numbers, they had no effect on making me feel better. I was still in the bottom 33%. The guys also had stories about people who were hilariously underprepared for the etape. The most concerning gossip was regarding carbon clinchers melting. Five out of the six wheels that folded for the Sportif Breaks riders were Envy branded. The food was super slow in coming out. Most of the others got crepes. I was wearing my vegan athletic apparel jersey, so I ordered sorbet. Taylor told us about some of the other trips he had been a guide on with Sportif Breaks. He had some insights into the other New Zealanders knocking around the Conti and Pro Conti ranks. We had a bit of a laugh about Ryan Mullen and Hayden McCormack's budding bromance. After being at the lunch spot for the guts of 2 hours, only because we were waiting for food, we headed back to Moutier, which was a 5-minute descent away. I replaced a chain on my bike. A new wax chain would be slightly better than the current one for the first 100 kilometers, and then much better for the next 200 kilometers. I put my bike on the rack and ensured that it shifted into 34-32 tooth cassette. I stupidly took off my cycling shoes for all this process, and the floor of the lockup was covered in silt, so now my socks were all black. I had a lovely recovery from the ride. I enjoyed being cold in the shower. I wrote my Facebook photo blog on the etape failure. I was late for pizza at lunch. Barry Mooney, Niall Kieran, and Peter Grealish and Colin Caesar were already finishing up. The guy refused to serve me at first, but then he agreed. He wanted to go home and have a sleep for the afternoon. So I got the last pizza. Awesome. The other lads were being harassed by a mental Belgian waiter. Niall didn't finish his food, and the waiter snatched his plate away in disgust. I would be polishing it off my plate. I went to the shop and made the burst, the best purchasing decision since the handlebar bag. I bought surfboards. These were jelly sweets with sugar on the outside. I think they're called dipsticks here in Ireland. Yes, I know, jelly sweets are not vegan, but I had little options. At dinner, we asked the Welcome Hotels restaurant so that we could use the Sister Hotels restaurant outside. The other lads were ordering beers like no one's business. I stayed away from the alcohol. I was already way behind on sleep, and alcohol impairs your sleep hygiene. They served some lasagna. It looked well presented, but it had factory farmed French beef. I don't recall anyone giving it high scores. I, on the other hand, was served a sweet potato soup. Wow. Perfect carb loading for tomorrow's monster spin. Paying for the hotel was another ordeal. They wouldn't take the price of the dinners that we didn't eat out of the price. Have you ever paid 40 euro for a salad, soup, and a plate of long grain rice? I have. Meanwhile, my Facebook photo blog had gone viral and posted in the WhatsApp group, and someone else forwarded it to someone else. By the next morning, Colm Cronin told me that his wife's dog's best friend's kennel maker's widow had read it. It wasn't exactly Pulitzer Prize winning content, but I like at least expected a job offer from the Sun. Come on, they do have my phone number, and the last time they called me, I was dropping a log. Chapter 2. I think I met a sports nutritionist mid-ride. Only when I was dressed and in the lockup, I noticed I had a loose thread on my Rafa Core shorts. I needed someone to break the thread, as I didn't have long nails. I asked someone, but that person's nails weren't long enough either. That person had to use their teeth. No names will be mentioned, but thank you to that mystery person who bit my ass in an alley. Normally, you gotta pay for such a service. The plan was to cycle from Moutier to Briançon, a classic alpine stage, 150 kilometers with 4,800 meters of climbing. The route opened with Col de la Madeleine, then 25 kilometers across the valley to the Col du Telegraph for lunch, and a short ascent to Valoir, then the Col du Galibier, and a descent into Briançon via the Lotteret. It was going to be another roaster today, so we started cycling at 20 to 8 in the morning. I used almost the same kit as I used for the Etape, Smelly Luke. I avoided the base layer. The jersey I was wearing, the This Is Cambridge Horse category, was very lightweight. The sleeves can be rolled up pretty much all the way. I wore it out once in winter with two thick layers under it. It was like lingerie. We started the Col de la Madeleine. Helen Horn went full gas at the start. Just 26 kilometers at 26% left on the climb there, Helen, and it peaks at 2,000 meters. The start of the Madeleine is a forest with windy roads. The last anyone seen of Helen was her tackling a hairpin. A group formed around Garrett Connolly and Niall Kieran in it. I banded together with Doc, Peter Grealish and Colin Caesar. Ashley Neal and David Hendren were in the group behind us. We were the laughing group, La Autobus. We were just tapping along at 150 watts. Our banter included the conspiracy theory about Johnny Ronan's bikes that were, as the rumor goes, stolen the night before the attack. Other subjects included housewife's heroin, aka codeine, that I had unwittingly been part of feeding an addiction for my previous landlady. Peter reckoned that Gar's group's pace was too high. He reckoned that we'd catch at least four of them. We quickly picked up three of them. This prompted Peter to revise his estimate up to six. Our fourth was Barry Mooney. Barry was taking photos, and he stuck with us. Colin and I had great fun reading the Climb Pro screens on our Garmin Star 30 series head units. We had Chris in the Sportif Brakes van with us. He pulled in, offered us bars, gels, and electrolytes. This was an awesome feature. On cycling trips, I generally don't find much value in having a guide. Here, on the remoteness of the Madeleine, in this heat wave, we really needed the Sportif Brakes support. As the temperature was climbing, I struggled to eat any solid food, so the gels were a welcome sight. The OTE branded gels do taste a bit rough, as I found they burnt my throat on the way down. I got dislodged from the laughing group on a long 9% stretch. Hugh Butler reeled me in as we got passed by another group of riders who were flying up the hill. We had an awesome view of Mont Blanc every time we turned a corner. As names for geographic places go, you really gotta respect Mont Blanc. Unlike Iceland, Greenland, or Jobstown, Mont Blanc was white, even in the height of summer. Near the top, I took some photos with Hugh. It was a good bonding experience. All those bonds were promptly ripped to shreds at the peak. The others were at the Sportif Breaks vans and picnic table. They cheered us on as we crested. I had to give these kids a show. I attacked Hugh, dropped him, and had enough time to zip up the jersey and celebrate with a trademark, Luke Lassou, yeehaw. We took some group photos at the monument at the top of the Madeleine. The picnic was very welcome. I ate loads of crisps. I swapped my bag of dates for the bag of surfboards. I positioned the surfboards in my jersey pocket for ease of access. I topped up my sunscreen, as Sinead Kennedy told me to get a small bottle, and that was in my handlebar bag. The faster group took the descent with Taylor guiding them. Our slower group had James guiding us. I don't have a palmarès for James, but I did hear that he raced some cyclocross. James was excellent at descending. There were tons of hairpins on the descent. The Garmin map was vital for navigating these. My wrist bones were aching on the 20-kilometer descent. At the bottom, Porrick got a puncture. This took ages to sort out. The town of La Chambre had a sheltered shopping center and an ice-cool fountain. Doc, Hashin, Hugh, and I took it easy. Dave and Porrick were sorting out the wheel. As they went to the fountain for the second or possibly third time, I, being Ginger, chose to stay in the shade. I was approached by a French lady in like her very early 40s. She only spoke French. I had no idea what she was saying. Oh, I only knew that she was saying sucre, which is sugar. I kind of presumed she was hitting on me. I was prepared for her to ask, "Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?" I would not eagerly say oui oui. I would coolly consider it, check my calendar for other mistresses' appointments. I whipped out the phone, Google Translate, set it to input via the microphone. She wasn't propositioning me. She was telling me that it's going to be 40 degrees and I should eat tons of sugar. I showed her my surfboards and my gels. She looked very concerned as we parted. Riding 25 kilometers across the valley was brutal. The temperature got up to 46 degrees Celsius. About 80% of the way across the valley, Hugh and Ashley got into the van with Chris. Normally on cycling trips, the van is called the van of shame. On this ride, it was the van of shade. We were on the Marmotte route, just after the Col de Glandon. We passed the Lacets de Montvernier and the Col du Chaussy. Taking a break, we were in the town of Saint-Michel-de-Maurie to refill bottles. Hugh was waiting for us. He and Doc put their heads in the fountain. Our next quarry was a Col du Telegraph. It is 12 kilometers at 7%. Hugh got back in the van. I seen Dave Murnan near the van too with a bleeding nose. I rode about 2 kilometers of the Telegraph. It was too hot for me. Struggling with hyperventilating, I got into the van of shade. This was very upsetting to climb off again. I had to be sure of my place in the van though. I took the last seat. Doc and Porrick were now left on with no option but to continue. They had both done the Marmotte, and I presume they had zero desire to ride the Galibier ever again. So the Telegraph was their finishing line. Dave Hendren gave me a cold water refill. I had 1,000 yards there. Chris, he was great crack in the van. We cheered on James, Doc, and Porrick. 4 kilometers from the top, Chris dropped us to the top. And then he went back to monitor the other three. At lunch, we finally found some people who understood carb loading. We had a panini and the largest bowl of chips possible west of the Maginot Line. This went down a great treat. We cheered on Doc as he crested. He tried to celebrate by taking his hands off the bars. He, you know, wanted to be like me, his hero. He wobbled, and we all worriedly said, "Woo." Doc tried again, but he wobbled a second time. Man, Donald is both dodgy and dangerous. Porrick arrived later with James. Before setting off again, I changed the contents of my handlebar bag, put all but one bar into my day bag, which would stay in the van. I stocked up on gels, 6 gels, enough for 2 hours. I wasn't overly concerned with having a stomach-related accident, as the solid food from lunch would solidify the gels. Plus, I made like a tactical bathroom visit between ordering my panini and receiving it. We rode downhill to Valois. It was the first time since TCAS I got to ride with Sean Kelly. Over here in France, he just couldn't stay at the same pace as me. We started the climb, and it was cobbled. What lay ahead of us? The fearsome Col du Galibier, 17 kilometers at 17%, oh sorry, at 7%, peaking at 2,700 meters above sea level. I ended up riding with Aisling and James at the back. I had a surfboard every kilometer that ticked down on my climb pro. I dropped Aisling when she stopped off to take some pictures. The start of the Galibier is really nice. This climb, just like the Madeleine, was deserted of civilization. The van was pressing on, so I didn't have a chance to get electrolytes from Chris. I swallowed a risky gel, an SIS, Science and Sport, double espresso. It tasted mank. After some hairpins, I seen Aisling below me. I was about to take a photo of her cycling, but then she stopped taking her own photos, so I ended up with photos of Aisling taking photos. I slammed down a few more gels, and I got onto the second part of the climb. I caught up to Colm Cronin. I tried to drop him, but he wasn't having it, and he sped off into the sunset. Phil came up beside me in the second van. He offered to refill my bottle. He did so, but Phil didn't give me a sticky bottle. Terrible DSing on his part. I happened across some camper vans. They had Danish flags outside, so I shouted, "Allez, Michael Morco!" As I neared the top, the temperature dropped to a cool 19 degrees. My shoes felt looser. I was able to push on. The temperature decrease was more of a performance boost than the Alps was a detractor. The van was waiting at the top. I looked at the road that I would descend. It was very twisty. I decided I was too fatigued to safely ride it, and I took the van as a descent into Briançon. Brian Colfer was the first to the top of the Galibier. Brian didn't get set up on Strava until 2 days later. Until he did the Pathways course during this winter, he only cycled casually with his mates. He was only a new member when Garrett Connolly posted about the trip. He backed himself and he had a great trip. The ultra endurance cycling world used the hashtag BeMoreMike to celebrate Mike Hull's achievements and contributions. The Pathways people should be tweeting hashtag BeMoreBrian. Niall was in the van, all wrapped up in a blankie. He was a bit sick. It was a tough day, with intense heat and now intense altitude. Niall rode the Madeleine and Telegraph at a much higher pace than I, so it was likely a combination of factors. I took a bunch of photos as we waited for Aisling and James. The camper vans were starting to amass on the Galibier. They were anticipating the Tour de France in 2 days' time. Aisling opted to descend the Galibier in Lotharay on bike. We followed her in the van. An interesting point of note on the descent was a camper van bedecked in an Irish flag. The Conor McGregor of campers, if you will, or the Sonia Sullivan of campers, depending on your age and or identity politics. The descent of the Lotharay looked class. Just a case of wrap all your fingers around the drops, no braking was required. As I write this, / read this, I regret not descending it, as I didn't get a proper chance again on the trip. Our hotel in Briançon, the Hotel Montbrison, was a lot better than in Moutier. The shower was a godsend, a heavenly shower head. The Hansgrohe adverts on the Cycling Podcast Kilometer Zero episodes are very honest. The room was still a bit noisy, as there was a busy roundabout outside, and it didn't have aircon either. The dinner was carbalicious, baby. I had a cucumber risotto and a boatload of chips. I was a happy ginger. I went back to the hotel to prepare for the next day. My overnight oats were put in the sink, but the water kept leaking out of the sink, so I pushed the stopper down hard. But then the stopper got stuck, wouldn't come back up again. Meanwhile, Ian Devlin went to the bar with some others, where he introduced them to a Negroni, the heir apparent to the gin and tonic. Chapter 3. I didn't try a leg on the Alp, but I chanced my arm at a holiday romance. I was honest when reporting my sink issue, as I am a grown-ass man. The breakfast was pretty much the same content as the previous hotel. Sticking to my overnight oats, I was getting used to the taste now, although it still made me puke. Today, there were four options for the ride. Option 1, the Charmin option, for triple quilted super softies. They had the option of the Van of Shame to the top of the Lotharay, descend to Bordeaux-Hoisson, climb and descend the Alpe d'Huez. Option 2, the hardcore crew would ride up the Lotharay, descend to Misouen, climb the Sarenne to Huez, descend the Alpe d'Huez, and climb the Alpe d'Huez again. Option 3, the middle distance option, which I opted for, was Lotharay, descend to Bordeaux-Hoisson, climb and then descend the Alpe d'Huez. The fourth option, also known as the second Goldilocks option, was Lotharay Sarenne picnic. It was favoured by riders who had previously ridden the Marmot, didn't fancy another Alpe d'Huez. Chris and Taylor went with the Sarenne climbing sortie. Phil said that the Sarenne should not be underestimated. It is one of the most difficult climbs in the Alps. The Sarenne is 12 kilometers long, averaging 7%. It ends in the village of Huez. Today's first quarry was a Lotharay, 26 kilometers long, but a nice steady 3%. This was my kind of climb. Taylor set a steady pace on the climb. I was third wheel behind Patrick Corbally and Taylor. We were riding in single file as to not annoy traffic. Then, something happened. Barry Green and Dara attacked. I responded, emitted a menage a trois. We got a big gap on the rest of the guys. Although I lost my breakaway companions when I stopped at Phil's van for a water bottle. I got back on the road and was riding with Shane Phelan. And we tried to hold off the advance of my Madeleine amigos, Barry, Colin and Peter. Shane dropped me on a rare steep ramp. I stopped off to take a photo of the upcoming tunnel and the permafrost on top of a mountain. Peter and Colin thought I had blown up. We were at 2,000 meters now. I had to wait for some cars and slower riders before remounting. I caught up to the 3-0 at the tunnel, which is essentially the top. There were some hotels and cafes up here. Tomorrow, we would turn right and ride up the Galibier to watch the Tour de France. Today, we went straight to Bordeaux-Hozon. This was the scariest descent of my life. It was super fast as we had a cross tailwind. My glasses were almost blown off my face a few times. We turned on our rear lights for the tunnels. These were horror shows. I kept forgetting to pull my glasses down my nose. All I could see was Niall's rear light. I gave him tons of room as I couldn't see where our wheels were. Terror is the only emotion I associate with French tunnels. My first trip to France in December 2017 was to Monaco. Monaco's underground roundabouts are not to be trifled with. Somehow we got to the bottom in one piece. I was on the front of the group. All of a sudden, a tractor appeared. It was moving slow. I had to slam on the brakes. The other lads went around it. I had to push hard to get back on the group. We took a wrong turn and ended up going up a climb. Barry Green was just in front of me as he was struggling with a bit of a knee issue. After grinding on the climb for about 10 minutes, James, our guide, realized that we were on the wrong road. Our current climb would take us to the fourth bend of the Alpe d'Huez. Today was the second time that Sean Kelly could ride at the same pace as me. By not riding the Serein, Sean knocked himself out of the running for riding the maximum amount of kilometers for the week. Only three men remained in that category. Those three road men were Brian Colford, Colin Caesar, and Peter Grealish. Mark Mulcahy was just 30 kilometers behind him as he opted for Netflix on the rest day. We arrived at Phil's picnic location at the foot of Alpe d'Huez. I carved up on some OTE energy bars. The Charmin group of triple quilted super softies arrived. Gar and Dave stopped in for a quick chat. Helen and Aisling kept on rolling. I steeled myself for the toughest 80 minutes of my life. I knew what to expect from the Alp. I rode it a few times on Zwift. The difference today would be that it was hot and I couldn't lower the trainer resistance to virtually increase the size of my cassette. We set about riding the Alpe d'Huez. It was brutally hot. I realized I had left my climbing legs at the picnic. Barry Green and I were very far behind, even before the first bend. I stopped on the bend to dry heave. It was too hot for this ginger. I tried to tell myself that I was a genetic abnormality, a medical marvel. I was the tropical weather ginger. A few pedal strokes later confirmed that I was a bog standard, run-of-the-mill ginger. There was a strong smell of baking coming from this little piggy. I didn't want the local cannibals to think that pork and ginger was on the menu. Barry Green pulled in on the second bend, his knee too sore to ride much more. I got revenge on him for his rest day stunt. I dropped him hard by riding 2 more meters than him. Dave Hendren and Pádraig Morrissey turned back too, although they got to bend 4. The heat of the sun reflected off the rocks was too much, and my Garmin was reading 42 degrees Celsius. I decided to ride up the Col des Sambos, aka the picnic. While the others toiled, we were having the time of our lives. Some little piggies are more equal than others. The other group from Portive Breaks, who were standing in Valoir, were there. Phil made me a tomato baguette. He had vegetarian tam-tams, which are essentially samosas with potato filling. I scoped a few fistfuls of salt and vinegar crisps as well. The YouTuber Rides of Japan always packs a tin of Pringles for his cycle touring adventures. I can see why. Barry Green was asleep. Bridget was telling her, was talking about her clubmates who were part of the Internationals. They were one of a few groups of women who were riding the tour a day ahead of the men's race. There was a cute American woman sitting beside me. It turned out her name was Kate. I sarcastically interjected to one of her sentences, and we struck up a nice conversation from there. She asked me to guess which part of America she was from. I said, Mexico, because you're wearing knee warmers and it's 40 degrees. It took her a few seconds to Fahrenheit my Celsius. It went on like that for a while. It turned out she moved to Boulder, so we had that in common as I'd visited it there in May 2018. I inquired about the nut jobs in the store in Ward and the alpaca shop in Nederland. Kate had not been to Rafa Boulder, hashtag RCCBDR, nor had she tried the rice bowl. For shame. The Goldilocks group of Shane, Barry Mooney and Patter got back from their excursion up the Seren. They weren't going to ride the Alp. Out of nowhere, like an RKO, Bridget just says, "You're all Irish, Catholic, you can all walk on water." We were like, what the fuck? How could she insinuate that about crack-loving, shamrock-wearing, jig-dancing, diddly island folk like us? The other group were waiting on a mysterious Tom character. He finally appeared. Then Kate and Tom started standing weirdly close to each other. It was hard to discern the body language. This was not the interaction of lovers, but it was also too close quarters for platonic friends. Like I said, weirdly close. Once all the Huez crew appeared, we rode to Bird de Hoisson and put our bikes into a bus trailer and got transported to Briançon. Four hardcore men from our group stayed out later to complete the longest ride by riding the Alpe d'Huez after descending it from the Seren. I wouldn't see Mark, Peter, Colin or Brian until the Galibier the next day. The Huez Triathlon was on the following day. The Alpe was sparsely populated with triathletes testing their equipment. Aisling told us that she was riding with some blonde, tanned Dutch women. Some fella gave them a spray of water from his hose. Aisling didn't want the water, but the fella didn't give her a choice. On our bus-based descent of the Lotterey, we saw that the camper vans had now taken over the whole climb. It was an awesome sight to behold. The Tour de France caravan rolled into Briançon too. Phil told us to prepare our day bags for the Galibier tomorrow. Phil and his crew went to scout out a place to set up so we could watch the tour. I'm pretty sure that they slept on the Galibier in their vans. I had put one vital thing into my day bag. Donal O'Connor didn't ride today. Instead, he explored the old town roads in Briançon. I checked the ATAP WhatsApp group. There was an image of a bottle of champagne in a sink. Donal, being pure sound, bought it for us to celebrate the successes of our trip. We all shared some before dinner. We had dinner in the same place as the previous evening. We got to sit outside this time. The proximity of the road reminded me of a picture that my brother Mark sent to me. There was a restaurant in Vietnam beside train tracks where you have to move your table to let trains pass. My dinner was devoid of carbs. Rural France was back to its old tricks. Inside our restaurant were the podium girls from the Tour de France. The whole square was packed with people related to the tour. After dinner, Porik, Dave, Aisling, Marie, Ian and I decided to have a drink. half of us tried Ian's Negroni concoction. The bar lady was quite confident in her memory skills until Ian started describing how to make a Negroni. She left and returned with a pen and paper. The Negronis possessed a sharp, dry taste. I couldn't see this overtaking the gin and tonic. Chapter 4. Nico Nico, give us a wave. There were some early birds this morning. Helen led a group of the Col du Isoir, 19 kilometers at 6%. They set out at 6:15. I had zero desire to get up that early, as I was only getting to sleep at that stage. Today was the day we were all looking forward to, watching the tour on the Galibier. We all agreed to wear our Orwell Club gear so that we could get on the TV. I missed the slower group setting out on the ride up the Lotterey, so I chased them down. I caught up to Colm, who was suffering from his Alp exploits. I dropped him, and I didn't look back. Revenge for the other side of the Galibier. The faster group caught me as I pulled in to take a photo and send it to Orwell PRO Louise. There was no coverage on the Galibier, so I had to send photos now. I got on the back of their group. Helen was also hanging out at the back. We hadn't had a chance to chat all week, so we had some banter. We arranged to sit together at dinner for bonus banter. Then she got dropped. She had cycled one or two more hills than me this week or something, but it was merciless. I rode her off the wheel. I was still nose breathing at that stage. She was finished. I looked back once just to make sure that she was well and truly dropped. Just like the Paso Gardinier 12 months before, I put her to the sword. All jokes aside, I felt a bit bad leaving a woman alone on the mountainside. I dangled off the back of the group hoping that she could recover. She didn't, but Colm was back there too. There was no real way to ask the group to slow down, as we were all a little anxious to make it to the time cut to ride up the Galibier before the road closures. I eventually got flicked from the group. Even solo, I enjoyed the climb of the Lotharay. I was bantering some of the people in the caravans, shouting out the names of their champions. For the Welsh flags, I put on a Welsh accent and said, "Come on, Geraint, the three valleys love you." I seen a few Basque flags. For some reason, the Basque people hold a special place in my heart. I shouted, "Via Pais Vasco," at them, which was dumb, because that's Spanish, and it's not the Basque language. Michael from bringmybike.ie was there. He took my new Tinder profile picture. This climb went on for ages. It felt awesome, though. It was a pilgrimage that I actually enjoyed, like Croagh-Patrick on Reek Sunday, except without the ingrown toenails. I made the time cut at the top of the Lotharay, so I could afford to visit the shops. I got a Calippo ice cream, my first in nearly 17 years. I shared a big bottle of Beedon refilling water with Dave Mernan. We set about our final quest, riding up the Galibier from the top of the Lotharay. It's 9 kilometers at 6%. The banter with the bystanders was on another level up here. The crack, it had exceeded 89. Yes, dear listener, the crack was 90. There were two lads riding old-fashioned single-speed bikes. They were kitted out in wool jerseys in this blazing sun. Everyone was cheering them on. I stayed with them for a little bit, just so I could get some of their adulation. I rode past the Irish camper van with the people out front. I started chanting, "Come on, you boys in green. Come on, you boys in green." They loved it. I loved it. Yeah, man. There was another group of Irish people and they had a flag a bit further up. We had a similar interaction. I passed the beef eaters. They were just getting started. I told Colombians, Viva Igan, Vinga Nairo Man. I even told a person from Florida that there were alligators on the climb. I am a crazy person. At the top of the Galibier, Doc told me to throw my garment to get a faster time. I pretended to do this. The gendarmerie did not like that one bit. Oh no, they didn't. The Sporty Breaks picnic was set up 2 kilometers from the top. They had racks for the bikes, a stack of our day bags, 2 tables and 2 gazebos, and they had a box of Heineken in an ice cooler. Phil had already prepared me a tomato baguette. Life was good. I got my special item from my day bag, an Irish flag, €7 at the airport. I wrote on it, Dan, Nico, Orwell on tour. We started waving at the people cycling by. We cheered on the children, especially. Oh man, if I have kids, I'm going to treat them to a hard cycle up the Galibier. Hopefully they can hold the wheel and don't get unmercifully dropped in a mountainside. We cheered on all my friends from Handlebar Bag Club. That was the funnest part. Gar shouting, Handlebar Bag, wah! And me chanting, Handlebar Bag, Handlebar Bag, Handlebar Bag. I had a hoarse voice and it was already 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Taylor told me, don't peek too soon. So I sat in the trench beside the table for a while. Kate appeared and we got talking again, mainly about Conor McGregor and how inspirational he was until he beat Eddie Alvarez. She didn't agree with Jorge Masvidal punching Ben Askren after the flying knee, although those punches were, and I quote, super necessary. Then Tom appeared and the weirdly close standing resumed. The tour buses came off the road and we cheered extra hard for Sunweb and UAE's buses, for Nico and Dan's teams. The caravan was next to appear. We were diving for all the free stuff. There was a camper van close to us and they threw loads of hats into the camper van's open door. Apart from polka dot and green cycling caps, the rest of the stuff was tat. I got a Bic Biro and some laundry detergent. Bradley Wiggins passed us for his Brad on a Bike Euro Sports segment. EF Education First set up a feed just after our position. Then Team Ineos set up a feed just before us. No one wanted to be first down to the Ineos car, so we edged down. The lads were really nice. Hugh asked them lots of questions about what was in the bottles. We arranged ourselves in a line out for the tour riders. I was at the front with the Irish flag. I was a bit nervous about taking out a rider, so I kept to only drinking 2 bottles of Heineken to be in near total control of my reflexes. You can drink and brag, but never drink and flag. Nairo Quintana flew past. I couldn't believe how close the lead motorbike was to him. I could not jump out in front of him and let him see the Irish flag. It was the same case for the rest of the break. We all made it onto the TV. Well, everyone except me made it onto TV. I was too far to the left of the picture to make it into the shot of Nairo Man and Orwell. The peloton came by. Egan Bernal put an attack just in front of us. Geraint Thomas was there and Julian Alaphilippe was bobbing along. Something or someone was missing. Nico Roach and Dan Martin were nowhere to be seen. Dan and Fabio Roux came up later. Dan was talking to the team car. The whole UAE team had a terrible tour. They paid the price for using a weird sports drink that made the riders hold water and gain weight. Ineos fed Wout Poels. A Wanty Group Gobert rider dropped a bottle into our group. There was nearly a melee. Gary Connolly won the Pro Conti Bottle Battle of 2019. The next Irish rider was to appear was Sorrento's own Chris Huell Jensen. He was riding with Daryl Impey. He saw us, he took his hands off the bars and said, "Oh, guys! We love Chris. Top lad." The autobus was next on the climb. It was a rather miserable laughing group. Led by Vincenzo Nibali, it contained Orwell's own Nico Roche. We gave him a loud cheer. He rode through us with his hand waving like the Queen. He gave us a shout out in his independent column. He recently told Shane Phelan that it gave him a big boost to morale. Poor Nico was targeting stage wins, but he crashed that morning and had a big cut on his hip. Peter Sagan rode up next. We were all shouting, "Wheelie, wheelie, wheelie." He put his hands on the tops of the bars, and for a second, it looked like he would pop a wheelie. He didn't, though. The poor lad is probably sick of being asked to do wheelies. Hugh Butler won the day, though. He got a full bottle from Team Ineos. Word on the street is Hugh took one mouthful and didn't sleep for 3 days. I bid goodbye to Kate. She wished that I got home safe. I responded, "That's kind of out of my hands. I just hope that the airport bar stops serving our pilot before midnight." It elicited a laugh. Funnier than anything Tom had said in the last 45 years. It would never have worked out with Kate. She works in some sort of finance. Girls who make pivot tables in Excel aren't my kink. I need a real woman. One who can implement a publisher subscriber pattern with lambdas on a serverless architecture. We rode down the Galibier through the crowds and then down the Lotterie. Michael from Bring My Bike was waiting outside our hotel to collect the bikes. We went to a pizzeria for dinner. As agreed, Helen and I sat at the same table, albeit with other Kerry people. I shared a bottle of wine with some of the women, and I got the extra glass at the bottom, because I'm a tank. I got to recreate chips as a pizza topping 12 months on from its inception in the Dolomites. I only had one drink in the bar afterwards, an Aperol Spritz. It was a core ingredient of the Negroni, but it was quite awesome on its own. I walked home with Helen and set about packing my suitcase so I would not be stressed in the morning. Chapter 5, Traumatic Travel, Part 2. Some of the lads had slight hangovers at breakfast. They stayed out pretty late. A guy from the bar tried to follow them home. They tried to dodge him by intentionally taking a wrong turn, but he sprinted down a side street to catch up with them. Phil also revealed that he was an ex-professional footballer in Trinidad. The airport was shite crack. It became more of a bad buzz when our airplane was delayed by 3 hours. We watched the tour on the now famous Stage 19 to Tingi. The TV was on mute, so we had no idea what was going on. I opened up my Reddit app. Ord Peloton is the best place to chat during bike races. I use the live comments feature where it just streams comments at you. Everyone was banging on about mudslides and blocked roads. I said this to the other lads. I don't think they initially believed me, but then the camera cut to the mudslides and I became a god to these people. Our aeroplane was delayed 3 hours as a plane that was supposed to fly to Geneva had problems on the descent, on its landing. Aer Lingus had to source a new plane. I was sat near two babies on the aeroplane. I anticipated loud crying all the way home. But actually, they were super quiet. The guy beside me was reading a maths book about elliptic curve cryptography. Have you ever sat beside a cypherpunk in a flight?
I have.
I was delighted to get home. I was delighted to get out of the heat. We picked up our bikes from bringmybike.ie on Sunday. Some of the lads clearly hadn't had enough of cycling as they went out with the Sunday Mountains group. Chapter 6, Tour de Force at the Club League. To complete the redemption arc, I returned home. I returned to the cold. I returned to wearing shorts into the office just to be cold. I caught up on some sleep. You cannot fully undo the brain damage that loss of sleep causes. Read Matthew Walker's Why We Sleep or listen to his appearance on Joe Rogan episode 1109 for a breakdown of the research. Barry Green added me to a team time trial group for the club league. Patrick Corbelly and Colm O'Neill were also in the team. I was only there because all the other limit riders were taken and they wanted my semi-limit handicap. They only needed three to cross a line. My goal was to take a few short turns and hold on for as long as possible after the roundabout. Patter had not fully recovered from his Alps exploits and he suffered badly. He went around the roundabout like a 50 pence. I dive-bombed him. I did not look back. I was the third man now. It was tough to follow Colm's pace, but I held on. My calf cramped, but I had to ignore it until it went away. On the final climb, I dropped Barry. This year, Barry's team went 4 minutes faster than the previous year, with arguably a worse team. The following week, the club league went to Mondello Park. This venue just does something to me. At the risk of sounding like a sexual deviant, Mondello turns me on. A couple of weeks with loose food and drink and I had swollen up to 74 kilos. The local Chinese was experiencing a Celtic tiger now that I had cut loose on the old diet. The weight didn't matter as I was up for the race. I gave semi-limit a speech at the start of the race. I don't know what Mondello does to the mind of your average semi-limit rider. They just like forget everything. Every man for himself. Then they all get caught. They all lose miserably. They all laughed at me and my attempts to marshal this band of misfits and delinquents. Only Dave Hendren said, "He's Rui. He's actually Rui. Ha! He's Rui." After the first lap, I knew I had a strong performance in me. I rode very smart, and I looked into getting into the rhythm of the attacks. I was in moves with Brian Mack, Alan Hickey, and later with Aidan Collins. I ended up on the front with two laps to go. Brian Mack pulled over. I just put the head down and drove. I looked back, and Luc Chanel was on my wheel. I thought the whole peloton was there too. It wasn't. Luke picked it up for the first tailwind and headwind sections. I did the remaining tailwind sections and he took the headwind ones. We built a big gap. Darren Kearney bridged over on the last lap. He didn't get back on in the tail section though. For the last lap, I handled the headwinds. Luke pulled out a slight gap on me. Darren appeared to fill it in. Luke was going to outsprint me, given that he could speak in full sentences. And I had just tunnel vision. On the last corner, we got swamped. Bad buzz. It was good to feel alive and gain the respect of my peers. Get a few back pats. The redemption arc was now complete.
That's it. We've done it. Lucigia Legion dismissed. Enjoy your shore leave, Space Cowboys.